Okay, I just got a little weird feedback there. It's a beautiful October day here in Ohio, and I hope you're enjoying whatever kind of afternoon you're having. It's a pleasure to have this teleconference today with two people from the Ivy Tech Community College period. Ivy Tech is a statewide community college system where they have multiple campuses,
conference
actually
muted.
30 degree-granting sites and over 75 communities. They've got 14 regions, but more sites and yet more communities that they work in. And they have a statewide system, which means there's some centralized control over the function of the college. They took this notion of better serving under-resourced college students very seriously and began a process of, through professional development, training faculty and staff and some of the core principles, and then beginning to understand what they've learned as they practice as time goes on. We've got two marvelous people to hear from today. Roger Bingham, who is the Vice Chancellor of Student Affairs at Ivy Tech Community College at the Columbus-Franklin County site, and Christina Collins, who's the Director of Professional Development at Ivy Tech Community College in Indianapolis. Indianapolis? Is that right? Yeah, that's, you know, I get really confused when I'm in Indiana. But anyway, these two folks are brilliant, energetic, innovative doers, planners, and people who can really get the job done. It's been a pleasure working with them and seeing how they've managed to implement this work on a rather broad and at times intimidating scale. So I will cease talking and let them proceed with their presentation. We'll let them talk for as long as Barb will be the moderator there in terms of time, and then we'll have some time for questions and answers afterwards. So make some notes as we go along, and please enjoy this presentation from Roger and Christina. Take it away, guys.
Well, hello. I'm Christina Collins. I am the Director of Professional Development at Ivy Tech. I'm really happy to have the opportunity to discuss with you today the under-resourced and engaging the under-resourced learner initiative in the Central Indiana region, that is Indianapolis. First, I want to say thank you to Carla and Barbara. They're wonderful resources on this topic, and they have been instrumental in helping Ivy Tech get this initiative up and running, so thank you. I'll let Roger speak to that as well. Today, we were asked to talk a bit about the history of the program here, share what our vision was for this program, where we are, and what the next steps are for our region. I'm going to talk a little bit. It's kind of a confusing system, so I'm going to elaborate a bit on Carla's introduction about Ivy Tech as a whole, and then talk about specifically what's happening in my region, and then Roger will discuss what's happening in the Columbus-Franklin County region. So where I'd like to start with is, as Carla said, we're a statewide institution, and that means that we have 14 regions, 26 campuses, and 200 sites. It means we serve nearly 200,000 students each year, and that when we're talking about doing training for faculty and staff, that means that we're serving about 7,500 faculty and 3,000 staff. So those are some pretty enormous numbers in terms of taking on a new initiative. We are the community college for the state of Indiana. We are also the largest post-secondary institution in the state. We exceed Indiana University by approximately 75,000 students and Purdue by about 120,000 students. I work in what we refer to as the Central Indiana region. This is Indianapolis, and our enrollment here is about 33,000 students. We are the largest of the regions, and we have about 2,000 faculty and staff. 575 of those are full-time faculty and staff. So when we say that we're embarking on a new initiative, it truly has a large impact, and this has been an enormous undertaking, and I'm sure that Roger will speak to that as well. So I guess the question would probably be, so why did we do it? And I'm happy to say it's because we were in desperate need of a common diversity effort. We have diversity in our mission statement. It's part of our strategic plan. And this was a great first step in bringing diversity to the forefront of the college. At Ivy Tech, we serve primarily low-income, first generation, and we also serve the largest group of minority students. So it was necessary for us to focus on diversity and to have that common language around the topic. And the under-resourced was a great place for us to start. So our vision for the program was very interesting. It didn't start out quite as grandiose as it has become. I will go back and give you a tidbit of information about how this kind of all got started. And it starts with myself and the director of training and development at the time were asked to attend the Bridges National Conference. This was in 2010. And during that time, we had discussed a plan to bring the under-resourced onto the campus, onto each of the campuses, but we saw it not quite as large as it would become. During the time we were at the conference, we started to interact with other nonprofit organizations, K-12, other post-secondary institutions, and when they heard that we were from Ivy Tech, we got a little spark, that we would get sparks in each of these, the eyes of each of these groups. And what we found was by the end of that conference, we had several people who were coming up to us, just community groups asking to partner with Ivy Tech. And I have to be honest when I say that it was a bit overwhelming. We weren't aware that it was going to have that kind of impact. So it took a few minutes for us at the end of the conference where we were sitting at a round table and we felt like we just really needed to debrief the experience and process everything that we had learned over the course of that national conference. So like the good planners that we were, we flipped over our brochure from the conference and just started mapping out everything we learned and what we knew and it led us to where we were hoping to go, which was mapping out our vision for the program. And where we knew we needed to start was with awareness. So we knew that as much as we wanted to jump right into working with other nonprofit organizations or doing community outreach, if we didn't have everyone in the institution speaking a common language, it wasn't going to be as effective as we had hoped. So we knew that the first step was an awareness training, and that's where we were going to start. Now, the director of training and development certainly spent much more time mapping out what the vision would look like, but that was the starting point. And so where we are now, or where we were in the fall of 2011, I should say, was it took us about six to nine months to come up with a training module that was about 2 hours long. And we did that by finding 32 people across the state in Ivy Tech to certify on the topic of the under-resourced learner. And those 32 people were champions. It was very important that we found people who were interested in this topic, who felt it was personally relevant, and could really go back to their regions and speak of the value of the content. So with those 32 people, each of those went back to their respective regions and began training. And I was one of those 32 folks who started the training. And in the fall of 2011, we ran the first pilot, which was 2 hours, and we ran four sessions. Those four sessions were designed for faculty, and that was during what we call our non-instructional week, others might call in-service. And we had a lot of very interesting experiences through that, and it certainly shaped how the rest of the training events went from that point forward. Altogether in our region, we've had about 250 faculty and staff go through the training so far and over the course of a year. And then last summer, we invited Carla Crotel back to speak, and she spoke with primarily our student affairs directors and assistant directors, and she reached an audience of about 120 people. So we've made great progress in trying to get the awareness out to each of our full-time staff, and our goal is to, at some point, be able to develop some online content where we can serve our adjunct faculty. The key learnings from having led this training event for the past year is that it's important when you're starting a new initiative to make sure that you have leadership support and that you have the endorsement of leadership to encourage your faculty and staff to attend. I'm happy to say that there wasn't any carrot to get those. At now we're talking about somewhere around 350, 400 people to go through the training event. They came by their own self-motivation, which I was happy to see. And they came because the leadership endorsed the importance of this information. We did it through a multimedia marketing campaign. It was called Flimp Marketing. It was video marketing, and it enabled us to take all of our flyers, all the contact information, create video, sound, and put that all together to create a marketing campaign that went along with this training event so that everybody understood what the purpose was, what their role would be, and that this wasn't the type of initiative that was going to start this year and end next year. And it was going to be around for a while. We also found that it was important for us in the training events to set ground rules, because as we know, this topic can be controversial. So we wanted to have an environment where everyone felt comfortable in sharing their opinion, but we had to lay some groundwork to make that happen. And of course, during those first four piloted sessions, we certainly had some hits or misses, but I think over the past year, we've certainly found out how to work through that, and it's been a very successful experience. That's what's going on in our region, and I know there'll be time to ask questions, so I'd like to turn it over to Roger to talk about what's happening in the Columbus region.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you today. Again, just a little background on our region, one of the 14 within Ivy Tech. We serve five full counties just south of Indianapolis and part of a sixth county, which we actually share with our central Indiana region. We have a total of about 7,000 students on an average fall or spring semester. Right now we have 438 employees in the fall. 227 of those, or 52%, are adjunct faculty. So you can see in our world we're very, very heavily laden with adjuncts. I'm happy to report, and I'll explain more about how we got to these numbers in just a moment, that we've trained over 300 of our employees, probably have another 25 or so lined up over the next 30 days with the additional presentations that we'll be doing. So we've touched directly 70 to 75% of our employee community with this material. So again, very good numbers. How did we get there? I will tell you it was somewhat of an accident, maybe even a misunderstanding. When I talked to Tondra during our training back in March of 2011, if I have that date correct, I asked her, I said, you know, if we're going to make this widely known and widely adopted, it looks to me like we're going to have to make it mandatory. And she said something along the lines of, yes, I agree. Well, I took that to mean that we would make it mandatory. So I came back to our campus and said, hey, boss, to our chancellor, we're going to give this material out, and we're just going to expect that everybody's going to be here. And he said, absolutely. And so we began to do that. One of the problems that we ran into was with our adjunct faculty, who said, you know, if I'm coming in on my own time, I really would like to be paid for this. So in a bit of a different approach, I guess, you know, we've had folks who've been willing to come, but perhaps not at the same level of willingness that Christina's seeing in the central Indiana region. I actually began this with sort of two pilot activities. In the fall of 2011, I sent out an email indicating that we would be speaking about this material, and I asked for those who were willing, any employee that was willing, to send me their poverty story. And as a part of that, request, I said, you know, understand that poverty is certainly more than finances. And I listed the 11 areas that we learned about in our certification and said, if you have a story that connects on one or more of these levels, get that to me if you're willing to let me share this with the group. It might be part of the training. The second thing I did then is during the non-instructional week, as Christina mentioned, I took this information to the faculty and did about a 30-minute teaser during one of their sessions. And I will tell you that the support for the content for the awareness was absolutely overwhelming. I had probably a dozen different faculty members that approached me after that saying, when will we get the full bit of information? How can we learn more? So again, because we chose to make this mandatory, we planned for about $6,000, $6,300 or so in expenses. We're paying our adjunct faculty about $25 each to attend the two-hour session. And during that two-hour session, I make sure that that the attendees know that if we run over, they're free to go. I think one of those ground rules that Christina talked about that we've adopted is I've asked for 2 hours, and I will honor that. Because there are times, based on the content or the conversation, that we end up going over the 2 hours. We do use the template, for the most part, that was provided by Central Office. I think as we're looking at lessons learned, that's one of the largest items, as I see it. Christina mentioned the common language component that we're seeking within the college. And I think having a centrally created content that we can then branch off from has been a significant part of that. So during the presentation, after I introduced the concept that poverty covers these 11 different areas, that it is far more than financial, I actually read one of those stories that I received as a result of my request last year. And it's interesting because as I read the story, you quickly determine that finances are really not a part of the under-resourced piece of this story at all. And so really now we're down to 10 areas, and every group that I've talked with can identify between 7 and 9 of those 10 areas where this particular individual is demonstrating areas of being under-resourced. What's fascinating is this employee, until this past May, was also an Ivy Tech student. She came to the college as an employee at age 18, worked for the college since age 18, but began her degree studies with us, her associate's degree studies, at the age of 31, completed in May at the age of 41. So I remind our attendees that, you know, this coworker, someone that they would know well, and I do not mention her name, you know, that she is a living example of our students. We talk about the mental model and the need to suspend the mental model that you have about poverty to make sure that we're learning. That's one of the components that was in our boilerplate. But I also present a mental model that I've developed around hiring considerations just to help cement the concept of a mental model, because we quickly move in from that discussion to a breakout of the three groups, or breakout of the larger group into three groups, and we talk about then assign them each a poverty, middle class, or a wealth status. And within that group, then one of the exercises is to work through the issues that that particular group faces. We also discuss the area of race and gender isms. One of the things I always ask out of that group is, how many of you feel that you've been discriminated against because of your gender or your race? And on average, I would say between 40 and 50% of the attendees raise their hand for that particular question. So again, I'm trying to bring this concept to a very real and very personal piece. We also, in our region, include the video on Tammy's story. Some of you are familiar with that. That was part of a PBS presentation sometime back. And we debrief that. We talk about the hidden rules of class using food, time, personality, education, and language, just those five areas. And then there's obviously more content, but as we close the presentation, I always ask, what's one usable, what's one takeaway, what's one nugget that you can walk away with right now? And I conclude with Jody Farr's story about the robbery, to highlight the difference in the language registers and really cement the fact that folks that we're dealing with in poverty in the community college area, they're very concrete, and that in higher education we work in a very abstract world. and that, you know, our responsibility as educators is to make sure that we help students make that transition. One of the things I like to tell our group is that I want to take the person out of poverty, not the poverty out of the person, because if we can get to a point where someone can handle the casual register and then can also handle the formal register, what I like to tell folks is we've made those students bilingual, and that they now can operate in both worlds. And frankly, because the wealth register, language register, is the same as middle class, that they ultimately can be trilingual then. Some of the exciting things that have come about as a result of these presentations is I've actually been able to take this out to community groups. One of the agencies that we have in town through our local United Way is called 211. That's actually the telephone number. It's also known as First Call for Help. And I was invited to speak to their telephone operators and the rest of the United Way agencies that wanted to attend. And we had about 30 people there that day. Sort of a humorous presentation was I was invited to speak to a Kiwanis group at a local restaurant called Smith's Row. And Smith's Row is one of the nicest, if not the nicest, restaurant in Columbus, Indiana. And so it was a bit of a juxtaposition, quite funny actually, to be talking about poverty and students in poverty at one of the nicest or the nicest restaurant in town. So that was one of those 20-minute quick overviews, very exciting. What have we learned? If you're going to make it mandatory, it may very well cost you some money. Be prepared for that. Another big piece that's come to life for us is that I need to be able to share stories about students that I've dealt with, and that's fairly easy for me to do because I work in student affairs, and we deal with students who have challenges all the time. I'm also chief disciplinarian, so I can talk about that part of the poverty realm. But we had a situation where one of our new part-time employees came to me just before the presentation started, and he said, "Roger, I can't do this." And I said, "What do you mean you can't do this?" He said, "Until 3 months ago, I was living in my car." And he said, "I'm just not ready." And I said, "That's fine. You know, we'll find another day." So we can talk about next steps later, perhaps as a part of the questioning. But I'll stop now, and I think would be a good time for questions.
I'll just start by saying that when I first started working with the Ivy Tech system, wait a second. Barb, how do people indicate that they have a question? I'll give Barb a second to unmute her phone.
Thank you. I think what we're going to do here, since we don't have a lot of participants this time, is I am just going to unmute everyone. So if you have a question, you can jump in, and please let us know your name and what organization. So take it away with the question.
Okay, well, I'll just continue here for a second. This is Carla, and when I first started working with Ivy Tech Community College, the scale of what they were attempting to do was really impressive. And it wasn't until I had been working with them for about 6 months or so that I really realized how impressive it was. You know, at times I was like, "Oh, come on, you know, let's just get it out there. Let's push it out there. Let's let everybody have it," you know. And then I realized that with that many faculty, staff, and students, that many sites, the potential for things to kind of go haywire was large, and I think that the level of wisdom demonstrated in terms of, you know, train two people from each campus, put together what a 2-hour overview that's applicable to the conditions in Ivy Tech Community College, political, economic, and, you know, when I say political, I mean college politics, and put that out there first and see how it's received. And so I guess my first question would be, given all that, the two of you, Roger and Christina, from such large campuses, what have you seen? Have you seen any differences? Are you hearing any conversations? What has happened since you've been doing these rollouts of the 2-hour overviews?
This is Roger. Yes, we certainly have begun to see the common language being adopted. Because I also work in the service learning realm, I also have faculty who come in and talk with me about you know, how they can integrate service learning in their classrooms. And we're now beginning to shift those conversations from, excuse me, in some way from serving, you know, just sort of a random agency in town to serving agencies that are dealing with folks who are in poverty. And so it's been very encouraging to see that kind of a transition.
This is Christina. For Central Indiana, what I've noticed is just the use of the word under-resourced. And so when I could be in random meetings that have absolutely nothing to do necessarily with this content, people will stop and they're reflective and they use the term and they understand the term. And so it's bringing it into a realm that it wasn't in before. So I can see the awareness happening.
Are you seeing any changes in terms of perhaps negative judgments about under-resourced students? And I ask you that because I was just in a meeting today about Race to the Top with some local high school teachers from a rural community, and they were very disparaging in talking about students, saying, oh, these students just say they're going to go back to the dairy farm and they're just going to milk cows. And, you know, I said to them, well, if that's what their mom and dad and grandma and grandpa and aunts and uncles are all doing, you know, what? How else have they learned that there are other opportunities? And she says to me, well, they haven't. And I was like, right, so then what are we going to do? So have you seen any shifts in that kind of thing?
I would say that, you know, my visibility into the classroom is a bit limited from where I sit in student affairs. Again, the feedback I'm getting from faculty, I would say there have been a couple of conversations around that topic that someone says, oh, I'm a little more aware of that. And I guess as I think through this, Carla, there was a situation where a student, you know, again, just a couple of brief details. He was abandoned by his parents, raised by his grandparents, has been institutionalized at times with mental health issues, and ran into, you know, the buzzsaw of one of our faculty one day. And faculty is a great instructor. He's not just not a particularly sensitive man. And so he came in, we talked, I said, you know, you've been through this training. This is a situation where these kinds of things have happened around these, you know, the particular 11 areas of being under-resourced. And, you know, you don't know all the backstory. I can share bits and pieces of that with you. But be more sensitive to that. And that particular instructor said, well, you know, this is I really was wanting to kick him out of my class, but I'll tell you what I'm willing to do. I will allow him to stay in the class in a distance realm. So he was going to be in, you know, just handle the class via online learning and did allow the student to complete. And so I think that could very well be a success story related to this content.
This is Sandra Chambers from Jefferson Community and Technical College in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm very interested in what you all have been able to accomplish across a statewide system. This past summer, we began this process for our college. Even though we're part of the Kentucky Community and Technical College system, we're just doing this as an initiative for Jefferson. And one of the things we did this summer was to conduct a reading of a couple of books with some faculty and non-faculty members. And now during this fall semester, we have opened it up to some others to begin reading as well. And we're using a similar format with a two-hour time frame, and we put together some survey questions for people to answer prior to the reading and when we meet to do the book talks. I must congratulate you all on being able to do it statewide. We were really challenged this summer about whether or not this was a conversation we could even have on campus. And we've been presently surprised at how people have been receptive. One of the things I really loved about, I think Christina said initially, was about the common language and an awareness. The other thing I'm really interested in, Christina, was to get some more information on how you all have been able to use this, talking about under-resourced students and improving or acknowledging or even developing a deep awareness of the diversity within your campuses.
Well, I think in terms, can you give me a little more information about what you're asking in terms of diversity?
Well, I thought you said that one of the reasons why you all wanted to do it was because there was a need for a common diversity language or vision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so part of, I mean, with Ivy Tech as a whole, part of our mission is, diversity is written in our mission statement, and it is part of our strategic plan. So I don't want to speak too much on a statewide level because I certainly represent the region, but I can say that in order to support our strategic plan, we certainly were looking for a diversity initiative that would serve the largest population. And when we look at our demographic that we serve, as I said, when we talk about, and I know this is only one aspect, but if we look at first generation or if we looked at numbers of students who were eligible for Pell Grant, we're certainly the highest in the state of Indiana for post-secondary institutions. So we thought this was a good place to start. I will say that during the pilot program, when we first started this, because we have not had a diversity initiative that addresses cultural diversity, we did have lots of folks asking questions about Ivy Tech's approach to cultural diversity. So in order, and as we know, this certainly goes into the topic of under-resourced goes into that realm, we tried to keep the training focused on the topic of poverty because that's what we were trained to speak on. But I'm certain that, and additional initiatives around cultural diversity are also needed.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
If I might just add, for the person there in Jefferson, I didn't quite catch your first name. It was Shannon or Sharon?
Sandra.
Sandra. Well, kind of close, but we were, Barbara and I were both just at both the Rural Community College Initiative and then at the Bridges Conference in Indianapolis here again Monday and Tuesday. There is a the president of Southeast Kentucky Community College, Bruce Ayers, A-Y-E-R-S, is very interested in this work and was talking about having us down. And there's also somebody, I believe she's at the central office in Kentucky, Marilyn Dowdy. I don't know if
okay.
that rings a bell, but I believe she's, I'm pretty sure that she's at the central office, and I think her boss is the, excuse my casual register, head guy in charge of academic policies or academic curricula for the system. I'm not too sure how you're structured either.
Okay.
And she was saying that he was very interested in the possible use of investigations into economic class in America as a new type of an orientation course. And I don't know if you're familiar with that book or not, but it, we can talk more about that if you're not. But those would be perhaps two other places to connect with kindred spirits in the state and see if you can support one another in whatever work you're trying to do.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Other questions or comments? This is Barb. I'll also say if you are interested in a reading group, Sandra there at Jefferson Community College certainly has some experience on it, and there is also the College of St. Mary in Omaha, Nebraska, presented at our national conference about how they are using understanding and engaging under-resourced college students as an across-the-campus reading. So if anyone is interested in touching base with other folks about this sort of approach or any other approaches, please feel free to email me at bduncanson, D-U-N-C-A-N-S-O-N, at ahaprocess.com.
That's B as in Barbara Duncanson.
Right.
Roger and Christina, what are you thinking about for next steps? What's the future hold? And may I also just point out that the speed with which you've accomplished what you've accomplished in a higher education system is, you know, deserves a standing ovation. I mean, March of 2011 is not that long ago, and you two have accomplished so much. And I don't know how your system works, but it works a lot faster than mine, so congratulations. But what are you thinking about doing next?
I would say in the Columbus-Franklin region, obviously part of what we're going to continue is connecting with all employees with this common material. I think we'd like to begin to drill down a bit on certain topics. I'm not sure what those topics would be, but this two-hour overview covers an enormous amount of material, frankly, from, you know, the causes of poverty at sort of the biggest macro sense down to risk factors associated with community college students. So I think you know, we need to begin to personalize this a bit. I think continuing to connect this with service learning, one of the options we have within Indiana is the college as a whole belongs to Indiana Campus Compact. Some of you from across the country may also have other state compacts that are sort of the service learning experts in the community. They offer community listening grants, and I think one of the things we'd like to see is a panel discussion about non-financial poverty and the impact of that on student progress and perhaps progress outside of higher education as well. The book reading idea is fascinating to me. That's not one that I had thought of. Again, we're dealing in a large sense with what's been given to us, modified that for our particular regional preferences. But I think part of that delving deeper may involve dealing you know, with a book and a particular focus area. Actually heard a wonderful speaker named Dr. Al Long yesterday. He's from Indiana Wesleyan University, and told a wonderful story and a book that he's authored, I believe is called Alone in a Crowd. Would really encourage you to get that book. Very connected to this material, you know, is the story of a family that he's familiar with. I won't tell you the whole pieces, all the pieces of it, and sort of ruin the thrill for you, but he was a remarkable speaker. If he writes like he speaks, you know, I want multiple copies of this book to be able to give away.
So for our region, we did start with a common reading. So we utilized last year understanding the framework. And so going forward, one of the things we're wanting to do is look for something that's specific to student affairs. And so our next goal is, because over the past year we focused more on faculty and the techniques, strategies, those sort of things, we want to look at what can we do to support our student affairs professionals so that they can better serve the under-resourced learner. And I don't know exactly what that looks like. We have a learning community on this topic, and so about once a month we explore where we want to go next. One of the things that they're looking to do is, because I have lots of people from Student Affairs in that group, is to start to run some workshops for students and to for not only us as faculty and staff to be aware of this topic, but to then make sure that students are also aware and that we're not using language that they're unfamiliar with. One particular area that we want to focus on is professional presence. So I'm looking forward to that.
I just would like to share a personal need that has become rather pronounced this fall. I work directly with under-resourced students here at Youngstown State. I teach the Investigations into Economic Class course, and I'm the faculty advisor to the student organization called Bridges Out of Poverty Student Union, and I employ nearly a dozen students from the investigations course to work with me on, you know, planning, trying to understand why financial aid information doesn't translate into financial aid knowledge or financial aid practice with students, that they still try to, you know, turn their stuff in August instead of by February 15th, and these types of things. And what I have run into personally this fall is that sort of space that I think, I was born and raised middle class, and wide world view, blah, 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 that's nice, but I was born and raised middle class, and so I still have, you know, particular triggers and things that I need to see from students in order to be happy about where they are. And then there's also my role as employer here, and, you know, if you allow it, you teach it, and so if kids don't call off when they don't come in, you know, you got to try to get them to do that, and, you know, if they're going to be more than 15 minutes late, they should probably call then as well, and well, they probably, you know, need to keep some sort of level of self-control when they're talking to you about things that they feel passionate about and these kinds of things. And I was running into, despite being quite sensitive to this and empathetic to it and really being humbled by what my students have managed to accomplish and the insights that they've shared with me and the knowledge that they've brought, I was still running into having real problems coping with the level of chaos, the lack of planning ability, the last minute or not getting it done at all, working a problem out till it's almost finished, but we're not going to actually complete the project. And I was getting so frustrated. And, the more frustrated I got, the more my, you know, expectations became more rigid, I guess I would say. And I started to really butt heads with some of my favorite people in the world, these students that I've been working with for so many years. And so I had to spend some real time thinking about that and going back to the notion of, okay, it's fine to understand that people have different hidden rules. It's fine to understand that the economic environments that they're living in are producing all of these pressures and stresses and circumstances and stuff like that. But bottom line, as a faculty member, as a instructor, as a student service provider, as an employer, what do you do? You know, how do you negotiate change? I have, as I admit every time I do a workshop, one of the world's strongest writing reflexes. I love to tell you how to solve your problem. You got a problem? Ask me. I'll tell you what to do about it, right? And that doesn't work. That doesn't work with under-resourced students. You can't go around telling them what to do. And so perhaps one of the things, especially with student services folks and missions, financial aid, and you know, tutors and stuff like that, to talk about, you know, how can you reposition yourself physically and mentally to be beside the student, working with them, being a partner to them rather than their leader or their, you know, employer or their director, to work with them and help them articulate first whether or not they actually want to change. You know, is there a need to change? And then, okay, you know, something needs to change, but do you actually want to make that change? And, you know, students have to work through that first, and then you can ask whether or not they'd like to work with you on coming up with a plan for how to make things different. How can we go and use some of this abstract information about hidden rules and resources and time management? How can we use some of that information to make a different kind of plan that's going to get you ahead instead of the same old plans that just keep getting you by in the same kind of crisis state? And it's that sort of, there's a new book that just came out from AHA Process. It's From Vision to Action. Roger, I believe you have a chapter in there where, you know, you've got an idea, you've got a vision, but now you got to operationalize it. And I think that's that sort of AHA process. You know, you get the AHA, oh, now I get it. But the process of integrating it into your own self so that you can be more effective in whatever it is you're doing. I am finding myself having kind of one of those growth spurts on that topic at the moment, which I'm glad for. I think I'm getting better at it, but, you know, I think it's a process that all of us have to keep working at. What other questions? Go ahead.
Roger, we talk a lot about a developmental advising model that we picked up from Valencia Community College some years ago. And I won't try to draw it out verbally, but if you can picture a big A on the left side and a big S on the right side, the concept is moving students from the advisor or the big A from doing everything for them to being the student being able to handle that themselves, self-sufficiency. And so, you know, that is something that I've been teaching the student affairs folks here for quite some time, and we're working it into the rest of the institution. You know, it might very well be something worth putting into this presentation since we have some regional connection with that. So I appreciate you mentioning that.
Okay, I'd love to see what you have on that too. I think that's a big issue, especially for faculty. You know, they might understand that things are different, but you know, the papers do when the papers do, and how do you interact with a student to help them make the kinds of changes that that they need to make to be successful? What other questions out there, folks? What's in your minds?
What was the marketing piece like that you guys said, Christine, that you shared that you used to introduce to your staff?
I received a grant for innovation, and this is a marketing firm that's called Flimp Marketing. And what they do is they take all of your flyers, your websites, they create a video, and they put all that together, and it goes out in an email. And so then when we sent that out to all the faculty and staff, they were able to visually see and hear what we planned to do and what the – and then all of the documents that we had in terms of what the three-year plan was, the points of contact, who to reach out to, and then any resources that we already had collected were all in one place. So it was really a really effective marketing campaign, because then we could also see how long were people looking at the video, how many hits it got, how long they were watching it for, did they click to any external links. So we had the AHA website connected to that so they could go there for additional resources. So we could see all of that information, and it told us a lot about our faculty and staff population and how they would, how they approached what we sent to them.
Can you talk some more about what you found in terms of people accessing it and what else they did with it or how long they looked at it?
Sure. What we found was most people watched the entire video, and it was short. It was less than a minute. So most people stayed connected through the entire minute. They did click there were two or three external sites that were connected to that, and they would usually go to one additional site, but they didn't go more than one click. We were really surprised, because sometimes, you know, you send this email out into the world and you have no idea how many people are really, you know, paying any attention to it. And we found that they did.
Is this something you can share that, you know, people can still view, or was that just during your opening time?
The way that this – I can see if they would allow us to still have access to it. When you purchase one a Flint video, that you purchase access for a limited time. So usually that stays active for, I think it was somewhere between 3 and 6 months. So I can see if it's still out there.
I was just interested to see, you know, what it was like, and if it is something to pursue for more, for, you know, other uses in our state.
Yeah, it's been used by several higher ed institutions, but usually, actually, the way it's used in the past was with admissions, and it was a good admissions tool to get to students.
And did you call it Flip or Flint?
F-L-I-M-P.
M-N-P?
Flimp. F-L-I-M-P.
Okay, then I understand why I didn't get that the first time. That's not a real word.
Yeah, I'm happy to share that if I still have access.
That'd be great.
And, you know, if you want to send that to me, Christina, at Spark, I could...
Okay.
Anybody else with questions, comments? Could we quickly, before we sign off, could we just ask, we have had a few people who have dropped off here, so we have a small group. Can we just ask the folks who are left if you would just tell us who you are and what your institution is?
Carol Easton, Antelope Valley College in California.
Christy Hills and Jan Clark calling from Wenatchee Valley College on two different lines at the moment.
I'm Linda Sulpizio, and I'm with the State of Ohio with our Adult Basic Literacy Education Program.
Linda's going to be doing a teleconference in the future here once we get our horses all lined up. Right, Linda?
I hope so. This has me, like, my wheels are turning like crazy.
Well, I have to say that, too. I don't have questions. My wheels are too busy turning. Thank you.
This two-hour training module curriculum that you came up with, are you able to share that at all, or is that just, you know, for your institution?
What I would suggest along those lines, this is Carla, is if you would come to a trainer certification. If you've already been to one, that's a different matter. But if you came to a trainer certification, you'd get all the background information, and you'd also get a couple different recommendations for what types of information to include in a two-hour overview, depending on what kind of audience you're trying to reach. I don't know that it would be a real good idea to try to present the information without some background, you know, a deeper understanding of all of this stuff.
Any other questions or comments? I will just make a final announcement here, and that is that our next teleconference is scheduled for December 5th, and it will be again from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, and we will be sending out an announcement on it. In fact, I will. If you registered for this teleconference, you will get an email from me with a link to the recording of the teleconference and also information about the next teleconference. But it will feature Lisa Stoddard and colleagues from Lewiston, Idaho, where they have been integrating a college program in understanding and engaging under-resourced college students and also investigations into economic class in America with their community-wide Bridges work. So, again, that's December 5th, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. More information to come. Anything else? Final words.
This is Carla. I'd just like to thank everybody for being here. I know I'll be seeing a couple of you at the trainer certification in the last week of October here in Ohio, and I'm looking forward to that a whole bunch. So I hope everybody has a good month.
And you can still register for that. The dates are October 29, 30, and 31. It is in Canton, Ohio, and you can go to www.collegeachievementalliance.com and click on event training or training events to get information about that, or email me. I'll be happy to help you.
Roger and Christina, thank you so much.
My pleasure to serve. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Christina.
And thank you to everyone. And we'll sign off now. We'll talk to you again in December, if not before.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.